Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Is there a single special book that you would give as a present or again and again? That is the question we asked writers John Banville and Angela Flannery, as well as economist and author of Money, David McWilliams, and all three join me now in the studio to bring us their recommendations. Good afternoon, everybody, and thank you for being so game and for doing this. John, buying books for people can be tricky, can't it?
Well, it can. You have to match the book to the person, obviously, and you know, you can make... I've made some bad mistakes in my time.
Go on, give me one.
Books have come back. I bought a book of my own from my mother. Which was a bad, bad mistake.
I'm stuck at you bought it. Did they not give you any for giving to your
I
mother?
I had, but I'd run out of the free ones. She said that she didn't get it, and then I gave it to her. And my mother never read a word that I wrote in my life, which I'm glad of. But she didn't read that one either.
Okay. But you did try and get her to read it.
Well, I gave it to her. Didn't expect her to read it.
Yeah, Angela, it can sometimes almost feel like an act of kind of aggression or judgment, the book you're giving somebody, can't it?
Yeah, my mother bought every book of mine when she was down in Tremor in the bookshop there. So I'm sorry, John, to hear that. I would be really opposed to giving people the books that you want to read. You know, I think it's kind of like giving children vegetables and saying to them they're good for you, eat it, you know, when they want beans or they want chips or whatever. So I think I try to listen to what people are interested in, and then I'd put quite a bit of research into the book that I'd buy them. And it would be something that I already, if it's sport or history, I'd try and find out. It would be something I'd like myself.
You're a very intentional book buyer. David, what do you do?
I'm a late Christmas Eve. I can identify. It's probably about 4:10 on Christmas Eve and I am panicking. And you know they say, don't judge a book by the cover. I'm the opposite. I will just grab whatever is there, and then I will shrink on Christmas Day when it's opened and you have, you know, you've given your mother a book about, I don't know, the history of Dublin GAA or something like that. Mm-hmm. And she's like, thank you, darling.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm a very much...
You know me so well, David.
Exactly, exactly. Okay. So probably, in contrast to Angela, I would probably panic. The Christmas book, definitely a panic.
Okay, let's get down to business then. So you've each picked a mix of fiction and non-fiction. We'll start with fiction. John, you've picked a classic, The Talented Mr. Ripley by Patricia Highsmith.
Yeah, it's the first of five books she based on the character of the psychopath Tom Ripley. They're very dark books. She was a very dark person herself. But they are compelling reading. But I have to confess that I picked this so that I could mention Ripley, the series on Netflix with Andrew Scott, which I think is absolutely masterly. It's the best thing on television that I've seen since The Sopranos. Andrew Scott is superb. Ripley, absolutely superb. That man can act with his face like nobody else.
It took a while to adjust to it, given that the Talented Mr. Ripley film we're so used to, and this was obviously a very different take. But once you kind of got into the rhythm and the look of it and everything, it was extraordinary.
It was fine for me, you see, because it was filmed during lockdown and it's filmed in black and white. And it's the Italy that I knew back in the early 1960s when I was a teenager. Oh, yeah. So it was, for me, it was like going back to Italy because there weren't very few tourists. And it was a black and white world. But okay. I think it's a beautiful piece of work.
Okay. So you got in there. I was in Italy before any of you peasants were in Italy. Angela, you're kicking off with a classic as well, but a new edition of it. 'Twas the Night Before Christmas by Clement C. Moore, but this is illustrated by PJ Lynch.
Yeah, no, I really, when you asked me to do this, I felt it was very important to have a children's book in there. So people will know this poem. It's 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, when all through the house not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. And I just think that it is a really beautiful book. When you asked about how difficult is it to buy books, I think one of the things that people struggle with is buying books for children. They don't know what age group, and they don't know, is it too old-fashioned, is it too modern, you know. But this is a really, really beautiful classic Christmas Eve poem that's beautifully classically illustrated by PJ Lynch, who's an Irish illustrator and former laureate in Nanogue. It's the kind of thing where you sit a child up on your lap at Christmas and read them the story, and they want your company and the comfort, and it's just a beautiful, cosy, you know, relatable book for small children. And so I think if you're an auntie or a granny or a granddad or an uncle looking, you know, with the kind of a 3 to 7 year old that you like spending time around, this is a lovely way before they get into phones to sit.
Of giving them time and ritual.
Yeah.
Okay, David, on another world completely, you've picked two novels, but these are two novels that are have in common insights into Trump's America.
Yeah, I think this Christmas, people will be buying books or thinking about, you know, what's going on in the world. And obviously Trump's America is the major talking point for many people. So what I looked at was two books, one called American Dirt. So if you think about the two types of groups of people who will be most affected by Trump are immigrants, largely from South America, going through Mexico, who will be dumped back into Mexico, but then will try to come back. And the white left behinds in places like Appalachia, who are very much part of the MAGA movement. So with that in mind, there's a great book called American Dirt by Janine Cummins, which is about a bookseller called Lydia, a Mexican bookseller, and her son trying to get illegally into America, being chased on the one hand by a drug cartel, having to deal with people smugglers, and then having to deal with the American border guards. And it is an amazing page turner. It's a magnificent book of imagination. Then the second book is one called Demon Copperhead by Barbara Kingsolver. And this is about Appalachia. It's based on David Copperfield, the original Dickens, but it's about Appalachia. It's about the opioid epidemic. It's about people who feel that the United States has left them behind. It's about the MAGA movement. And it's, again, a wonderful piece of storytelling. Both books are very empathetic. And I think that if you're trying to look at the big world of politics and economics and demography and all that sort of stuff that's going on at the moment, sometimes just a brilliant story. Exactly. So these are two great stories. Great stories.
All right. Now we'll need to start moving a bit faster here if we're going to get to everything. And I would like to get to everything. So, John, let's turn to biographies. You have chosen Craig Brown's biography of Queen Elizabeth II, A Voyage Around the Queen.
It's an enormous book. It has everything you could possibly want to know about the Queen, every anecdote, except one, and I'll tell you that one. It was told to me by Nigel Hawthorne, my friend Nigel Hawthorne, who's played Sir Humphrey. He was invited to a luncheon party at Buckingham Palace. There were 20 or 30 of them. They sat down. Before there was a tiny plate with a peach and a tiny knife and fork. And they all sat and looked at it helplessly and thought, what am I supposed to do with this? And he glanced up the table where the Queen was sitting, and she was munching away on the peach with a drop of peach juice falling off her chin. And he thought, what a wonderful prank she'd played. And I think, you know, how could you not be fond of somebody who'd play a wonderful, harmless prank like that? But this is a wonderful book. It's wonderfully entertaining.
Okay, and Craig Brown's quite a funny writer, isn't he? Yeah, yeah. Angela, you picked an autobiography, Why Be Happy When You Could Be Normal, and this is by the writer Jeanette Winterson.
Yeah, I mean, Brendan, I would call this a memoir rather than an autobiography. I think at Christmas time, people do give autobiographies as gifts, and certainly I've received them. But I prefer a memoir, and the difference, I think, between them is that an autobiography really is the facts of somebody's life, whereas a memoir is much more about their interior life and their feelings. So I'm very interested in when, you know, artists of any kind. And I mean, last year it was Bono's, the year before it was Sinead O'Connor's memoir. I've read Tracy Emin's memoir. John McGahern's memoir is one of my favourite books. But the one that I give to people is Jeanette Winterson's Why Be Happy When You Could Be Normal. Jeanette Winterson is the author of Oranges Are Not the Only Fruit. But her memoir is one of the funniest and saddest things that I have ever read. And I think at Christmas time, I mean, it's really a mother-daughter related, the story of her relationship with her mother. Yeah. She was adopted as a baby in Lancashire in 1959. But I think at Christmas, we all think our families are very dysfunctional. And I kind of find this just reassuring to sit down and read this sad but hilariously black and funny memoir that will remind you that actually no families are perfect, and this one is particularly imperfect. So it's a great read. Anyone I've ever given to okay. has gone on and bought it for someone else.
Why Be Happy When You Could Be Normal by Jeanette Winterson. David, you've picked a biography of James Joyce, but about particular years in his life. The Years of Bloom, James Joyce in Trieste, 1904 to 1920 by John McCourt.
Yeah, this is a book that is absolutely fascinating because McCourt, who is a professor of Italian literature, I think one of the very few Irish-born professors of Italian literature working in Italy, and he writes about Joyce arriving in Trieste and those years he spent in Trieste and the development of the character Bloom in Trieste. And it's, again, it's one of those books that takes a story, but in the same way as John was delivered into the 1960s Italy, it delivers you into this extraordinarily cosmopolitan city where Joyce found his home. And it's, again, it's a wonderful, wonderful read. It gives you tiny little, amazing little details that you'd never really have unearthed before. And it gives you a picture of, yeah. of this man and his life and his family and what he was doing. And it's extraordinary.
And you used that the story of Joyce in Trieste is in your yeah. book, Money, as well.
Yeah, it is. But it's funny, I was listening to John there about the Queen. Another mate of mine gave me a story about the Queen and Phil, the Greek Prince Philip. He was running a charity in the UK. And of course, the Queen was the figurehead of the charity. And they went to a Christmas lunch and the Queen's at the far end of the table and Prince Philip's on the other far end of the table, and everyone's, you know, waiting nervously, thinking, you know, what do we do? Who's? And all they hear from one end of the table is, ksh! And it was the opening of a can of Double Diamond. So fill the Greeks' tipple with cans okay. of Double Diamond. So, no, don't let me sell a bag of cans in Buckingham Palace.
Yeah, yeah. I was waiting nervously during that story as well, but all's well that ended well. John, before we get to your next book, you have a late edition as well, another book around Joyce, Penelope Unbound by Mary Morrissey.
Yeah, it connects with the last one. Connects very well. Because Mary Morrissey in Penelope Unbound, she imagines that Joyce left Nora at the train station the first night they arrived in Trieste. He went off, got into a fight, ended up in jail. Mary Morrissey imagines that he didn't come back. And Nora Barnacle makes a life for herself, first in Trieste, and then in Dublin, where she becomes a manager of Finn's Hotel, where she was working as a chambermaid when she first met Joyce. So it's a beautifully rounded, beautifully imagined piece of work. It's the best novel I've read in many, many years.
Really? Okay. Wow, that's high praise. Okay, so that's called Penelope Unbound by Mary Morrissey. So contemporary fiction then, John. Carla's Choice by Nick Harkaway is your choice here. It's a spy novel.
Yeah, it's a wonderful book. Le Carré was a friend of mine. I didn't meet his son, Nick. I was very doubtful.
So he's Le Carré's son, yeah.
Yeah, Nick Harkaway is John Le Carré's son. David Cornwell, just to make it complicated, which is his real name. I was a bit worried. I was a bit nervous because I knew that this book was being written. Harkaway sent it to me early on, hoping I would like it, and I loved it. I think it's an absolutely amazing piece of work. It's every bit as good as his father's work. It's every bit as confusing and every bit as entertaining. It's a wonderful book.
Yeah, I'm imagining you and Le Carré sitting down and the tricksterism and the circling of that conversation. Time and space becomes...
He was very straightforward. He was an absolutely wonderful mimic. His Margaret Thatcher was uncanny. If you'd close your eyes, you would swear Thatcher was in the room.
Okay.
And he was very funny and had a wonderful fund of stories. But this is a splendid book, Carla's Choice.
Okay, Nick Harkaway. Angela, you picked a collection of short stories, and actually we had the writer of this, Maggie Armstrong, was in with us a few months ago, All Romantic. She certainly is a distinctive voice, isn't she?
Oh, I think she's remarkable. I first came across her when she published some stories in the Dublin Review magazine. So her collection of stories, Old Romantics, was published by Tramp Press this year, and it's on the shortlist for the newcomer in the forthcoming On Post Irish Book Awards this week. Very strong shortlist, so it's all to play for there. But this was my favourite book of the year. It reads like a novel. It does not read like a short story collection, and it's because Maggie has written a novel about a woman called Margaret, who is in her late 20s, early 30s, and she's kind of stumbling stumbling through life in Dublin, through career, through, you know, relationships with the wrong guys, you know, sort of how she gets on with her family. And it's so funny and so remarkably clever, and a great social commentary and snapshot of Dublin at a particular time. It's kind of like a very down at heel, dark version of Sex and the City, but it's in Dublin, you know?
Yeah. So, okay. The great All Romantics by Maggie Armstrong. Mm. And David, you've picked a kind of a collection of short stories that's not a million miles away from that, Sweet Home by Wendy Erskine.
Yeah, so Wendy Erskine is a brilliant brilliant writer based in East Belfast. Her stories are about East Belfast in the main, but it's really, her stories are about the complicated lives of ordinary people. So they are dark, they're funny, they are very revealing, because I suppose sometimes when people write about the North, it's very easy to fall into the stereotypes, you know, this crowd are like this, this other crowd are like this. But I just think Wendy Erskine is one of the great talents writing at the moment in Ireland. They're really wonderful short stories.
Okay, Wendy Erskine, Sweet Home is the name of that book. Okay, non-fiction next. John, you have chosen a book about swifts, the bird.
Yeah, it's called One Midsummer's Day. It's by Mark Cocker. It's mainly about swifts. It's about many other things as well. But the swift is one of the most remarkable creatures on the face of the earth. It's only about 15 centimetres long. It has an enormous wingspan. If it were the size of an albatross, it would have a wingspan of 75 metres.
Wow.
On its annual migration, as the author Mark Cocker says, from Ballyshannon to Beijing and back is 26,000 kilometres, and it doesn't stop. Doesn't stop until it gets to Beijing, and when it leaves Beijing, it doesn't stop until it comes back. They fly constantly. But one of the most amazing things about them, this is the last thing I'd say, at twilight, they rise up and they go up to about 5 kilometres high. They've been spotted by aeroplanes. And at dawn, they come back down again. Nobody knows why. Absolutely amazing birds. And this is an amazing book.
Who knew? Okay, One Midsummer's Day, Swifts and the Story of Life on Earth by Mark Cocker. Angela, your non-fiction pick is a graphic novel?
Yeah, I don't read many graphic novels. It's Palestine by Joe Sacco. This was recommended to me during the year by an artist when I asked him, you know, he had teenage kids as well, how is he explaining Palestine to his kids? And I was saying, you know, not that my son is a reluctant reader, but he'd certainly be more inclined to read a comic book. And he said, well, have you ever heard of Joe Sacco? So I looked into this guy. He's a cartoonist and an American journalist. And in 1991 to 1992, he spent 2 months in Palestine, just around Palestinians, you know, sort of just witnessing their everyday lives, going to, you know, demonstrations, going to funerals, all of this. And he wrote 9 comic books that were then collated into this graphic novel that in 1996 won the American Book Award. But since 2023, because of what's happening in Palestine, there's huge demand for this. So it's gone back into print. Okay. You won't get it in the library. There's so many reserves on it. So you've got to go buy it. It's an incredible book.
Palestine by Joe Sacco. And David, again, you've chosen a book about Palestine. And again, I think in your spirit of telling
what are people
a story.
Thinking? Yeah, what are people thinking about? An amazing book by a guy called Nathan Thrall, A Day in the Life of Abed Salama. And it is, the story is about his son. It's a true story. A 5-year-old boy called Milad, who goes out on a school trip to an adventure centre and never comes back, is on a bus that gets hit by a juggernaut, explodes into flames. Many of the children are killed. So that is the story, true story. But what Thrall does is he sets it in the context of living under occupation and what it is like for the daily humiliations of Palestinians. But what he also does, he doesn't create all Israelis bad, all Palestinians good. He just talks again about the complexity of life living. So all around East Jerusalem, suburbs, Palestinian suburbs, have been annexed gradually. And not only are they annexed and there's walls put up and there's barriers, etc. So their daily life is a constant hassle. And Thrall is an interesting guy. He came to the Doki Book Festival last year. He is an American Jewish writer whose parents sent him to Israel to become a Zionist. And when in Israel, he turned and said, hold on a second, this is not right. So again, if you want to read a story of the appalling conditions of people in the West Bank and the daily humiliations. Okay. It's a great book, and he does it brilliantly. So
okay. Definitely A Day in the Life of Abed Salama, a Palestinian Story by Nathan Thrall. Okay, final choices then. Back to you again, John Banville. Tell me about Three Roads Back.
Three Roads Back is by Robert Richardson, a great scholar and a great biographer. His trilogy of biographies of Emerson, William James, and Henry David Thoreau are masterly. This is a little book that he wrote at the end of his life. He died in 2020. And it's about how these three subjects of his, Emerson, Thoreau, and William James, dealt with bereavement and loss. It's not a self-help book by any means. It's just a beautiful meditation on death and bereavement and how it's dealt with. And I just read a very short passage at the end from which he quotes from Emerson. And it's very apt to our times. He says, although knaves win in every political struggle, although society seems to be delivered over from the hands of one set of criminals into the hands of another set of criminals, as fast as the government has changed, and the march of civilization is the train of felonies, yet general ends are somehow answered. I think that's quite comforting in these times.
Okay. And was that something you read when you were grieving yourself?
Yes.
And what did you get from it?
It's a beautiful book. I knew Robert Richardson. He was a friend of mine. He was one of the wisest and kindest human beings I've known. And it was just a pleasure to, 20-something years after his death, to hear his voice again and be comforted by it.
Okay, right. Three Roads Back, How Emerson, Thoreau and William James Responded to the Greatest Losses of Their Lives is by Robert Richardson. Angela Flannery, your final pick is Colm Tobin's Long Island.
Yeah, I loved it. I couldn't wait for it, in fact. So this is the sequel to Brooklyn, even though Colm Tobin said there would be no sequel. And you get to find out what happens to Eilish Lacey next. And it's such a, like, so beautifully written and so cleverly written, you know, with all these three different points of view, and constantly it's a real page turner. But then you get to the end and you're on a cliffhanger. I'm not going to say anything because anyone who's read it will know what I mean. So now...
And he's got to go again, does
he's
he?
He's got it, and I've met him and I'm like, you have to go again. You can't just leave us there. But I love it because it's, you know, my it's one of those things where I'd be on the phone to my mother and she's read it and we would be at odds about who made the right decision and these moral dilemmas that are in it. You know, it's community and it's families and relationships. But I loved it. Really.
And when she gave her, she gave her mother a fridge and the mother says, I'll be here trying to pay the electricity bills while you're back off sunning yourself in America. Classic, a classic line. David McWilliams, your last choice. We're going a little bit highbrow here now. Dante's Divine Comedy, A Journey Without End by Ian Thompson.
Well, this is the great spoofer's guide to Dante.
Okay.
So let's go, middle ground.
Glad to hear it.
John started in Italy of the 1960s and we'll end in Italy of the 1300s. During the lockdown, this is one of the most rewarding books I've ever read. During the lockdown, I was thinking, I don't know anything or very little about Dante. Mm. And I know that scholars think that this is the man who is the foundational stone of European literature. So I said, okay, I'm going to learn about him. And I went and I talked to somebody, a professor of Italian, and she explained what was going on. But then I thought, look, let's put it in the context of the time. So this is a great book. It's about Dante's life, but it's written about what was going on in Florence in the late 12th century, 13th century, into the 14th century, right? Just before the Black Death. It's an amazing book because it brings you into this city that is exploding with art and creativity and technological advances, and there's dodgy popes and there's all sorts of skullduggery going on there. There's dodgy bankers, the whole thing, not unlike the world today. It's really, and again, it gives you a grounding in the book that, you know, Beckett had beside his bed when he died. Heaney is a huge Dante obsessive, as too was Joyce. And again, if you want a really good introduction to this giant of literature, it's well worth it.
Okay, Dante's Divine Comedy, A Journey Without End by Ian Thompson. listen, people are loving this, and I'm really grateful to you all. You gave this proper thought and everything. These are really good recommendations. Before I let you all go, John, what's the best book you've ever been given?
Well, I was just given it the other day, and I suppose it wasn't present.
That's recency. I think we call that recency bias.
It's a beautiful thing. I would never have bought it for myself because it cost £99. It's called Bonheur. It's on the
Spell
French
that.
Painter Pierre Bonheur, B-O-N-N-A-R-D. Pierre Bonheur, one of the great modernist masters. He was the one that Picasso always complained about. Therefore, you knew he had to be good. It's by Isabel Kahn. It's published by Prestel. As I say, it's £99, a big investment, but it is one of the most beautiful art books I've ever seen.
Okay. David, best book you were ever given?
I think Animal Farm. It's the one I really remember.
Yeah.
My mother gave it to me when I was about 15. And I remember getting sick after the Christmas holidays and being at home alone and deciding, okay, I'll read this. And it kind of opened up a whole world of how to write, you know, how to actually explain the world,
yeah,
using allegories, using little stories, that whole thing. And for a 15-year-old who was always curious about the world, this opened the whole thing up.
You see, there you go. You can give a 15-year-old a book and you can change the trajectory of their lives and never forget that. Angela, what's the best book you were ever given?
I get it every year. It's Winter Papers, Kevin Barry and Olivia Smith's anthology.
People in Cork all thought you were going to say the Holly Bow there.
Did you? Yeah, no.
It's a kind of a Winter Papers for Cork people, yeah.
No, I think the appeal of it, well, first of all, it's beautiful. It's cloth bound. It has gorgeous end papers in it. It's €40, so it really is a gift book. But it's an anthology of short stories, poetry, photographs, interviews. So it's Ireland's arts anthology. And when I thought about it, why was this so appealing to me? So when I was growing up, you talk about kids having books, we had annuals, we didn't have books, so I'd get the Bunty or Spree or Sugar. So this is like Sugar or Spree for adults who are into the arts, and I love it.
Or the Royal Rovers annual or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, listen, that was terrific. Thank you all so much, and we'll put all those recommendations up on our website, rte.ie/Brendan. John Banville, David McWilliams and Angela Flannery, thank you all very much. We'll take a break.